Sesame Seeds and the Entire Spectrum of Human Emotion. Written by Ron Binary. Read by Kaylin Wrights. Draco had had a year to get himself ready for his trial, but even after all that waiting, and all the days of the trial itself, Judgment Day still came too quickly. The Wizengamot had started with the worst of the Death Eaters right after the war, including his father, whom they sent immediately to Azkaban. His mother's trial had been just last month, and after a moving testimony from Potter, of all people, she walked free. Well, she was on probation for 3 years, and had to stay within a few kilometers of the manor during that time, but she was safe from Azkaban. Draco had never gotten the Dark Mark, which he guessed was why his trial was one of the last. But he didn't think for a second he'd be getting off free. Not after what he'd done. Been coerced into, sure, but at the time, he'd believed in the cause. He hadn't expected Potter to show up at his trial, too, to speak for him so strongly. And now, on verdict day, the Wizengamot looked almost conflicted about what to do with him. But they'd made a decision.
"Draco Lucius Malfoy," the chief warlock announced. "For the crimes of conspiring against the state, aiding and abetting Death Eaters, and the use of unforgivable curses, you have been found guilty. However, this court believes you acted out of necessity, not cruelty. Therefore, the court has decided that you will not be sent to Azkaban. You will instead be exiled from this country. You will be free, but you will be barred from ever entering Britain again."
Draco's jaw dropped. Free. He was free. It was almost unbelievable. And then he thought of his mother. His mother who had sacrificed everything for him and would now be alone in the manor with no one. He wouldn't be able to see her again for years when her probation finally ended. Just a month after her trial, she was already a shadow of the woman who'd raised him, and he didn't know if she'd make it until then. No. Draco needed to stay in Britain. He had no choice. He had to take care of her. Draco thought of Potter's earnest testimony in his favor. He thought of obscure old laws from the books he'd been studying during his probation. And then a plan started to form in his head.
"Sorry, what?" Harry's brow narrowed in confusion.
"You're needed on level 2," Ron repeated.
"No, I heard you. Why?"
"Hell if I know. Robards just told me to get you. Something about Malfoy's verdict."
"Malfoy?"
Harry stood up and grabbed his jacket, walking briskly toward the lift. "Is everything okay? Do they need another testimony?" Ron rolled his eyes, walking alongside Harry.
"I told you I don't know. Just get there, yeah?"
He reached in the lift to hit the button for level 2, then left Harry to ride down alone. Harry had been with the Aurors for almost a year now. After the war ended, he'd tried to spend time with the Weasleys and with the Hogwarts rebuild, but this had only resulted in him fighting with Ginny and getting frustrated with not being able to help Hogwarts in the ways it really needed. The Auror department was a vast improvement from the awkwardness of Weasley dinners after the breakup, or the anxiety from seeing Hogwarts so far from recovery. Officially, Harry was in training for 6 more months. Unofficially, he'd already gone along on missions to take down Death Eaters in hiding. He had only been down to level 2 twice since he started working at the Ministry, once to testify in the trial of Narcissa Malfoy, and once, just a week ago, to testify in Draco Malfoy's trial. It had been odd to see Malfoy so quiet and composed. Harry entered the courtroom slowly, not wanting to interrupt, but everyone was quiet, staring at him as he entered. Malfoy was sitting in the solitary chair in the middle of the courtroom, just as put together as last week in his fancy dress robes, but his expression looked slightly pained.
"Thank you for coming, Mr. Potter," Chief Warlock Grimsworth said. "Mr. Malfoy has been given a sentence of exile from Britain. However, he has invoked Wilkie's Law, which states that defendants married to upstanding citizens of this country may not be forcibly removed." Mr. Malfoy has informed us that he is to be married this weekend. To you.
Harry's jaw dropped open. He turned to look at Malfoy again, whose face was still. But Malfoy's eyes were pleading with Harry. Eyes that once stared into a bathroom mirror, devoid of hope. Eyes that had begged Harry to save him as a fiery inferno raged around them. Eyes that now shone with desperation for Harry to go along with this. Harry gulped, but he couldn't find it in himself to reject Malfoy's call for help. After a moment of silently cursing himself in advance for agreeing to this, Harry turned back to the Chief Warlock and nodded. "Yes, that's correct." Grimsworth blinked.
"Mr. Potter, you mean to say that you are currently engaged to Draco Malfoy?"
"Yes, that's right."
"And your friends and family can confirm that you and Mr. Malfoy are together?"
Harry swallowed, trying to come up with an answer. We've been keeping it quiet. Didn't want to cause a fuss with Draco here on trial."
"I'm sure you'd be willing to corroborate your story under Veritaserum, then, Mr. Potter."
Harry opened his mouth to reply, but was cut off by Malfoy.
"Under the forcible use of dangerous potions law of 1746, it is against the law to force Veritaserum on anyone unless they've been arrested for a Tier 5 crime or higher. And Harry, of course, wouldn't want to suffer through Veritaserum willingly, just to satisfy your doubt."
"I assure you, Veritaserum is perfectly painless," Grimsworth said.
"Painless, is it?" Malfoy leaned forward dramatically. "It may have been painless for you to watch me on Veritaserum during my trial, but I assure you that it's something I would never subject my loving fiancée to."
Harry looked incredulously at Malfoy, who raised his eyebrows in challenge. The Chief Warlock didn't seem to notice the unspoken conversation between them.
"Mr. Potter, can you confirm that you won't willingly take Veritaserum to verify your relationship with Mr. Malfoy?"
Yes. Sorry, I won't."
Chief Warlock Grimsworth frowned, but nodded to the court scribe.
"Very well. Mr. Potter, you are dismissed. Mr. Malfoy, you will be released today. Once we have investigated and verified the legitimacy of your partnership with Mr. Potter, and you've been legally married, you will be permitted to remain in the country permanently. For now, you will be free to stay in Britain, but your investigation by one of our senior aurors will begin as soon as you leave the Ministry today."
He flicked his wand, and the chains around Malfoy's hands and feet dropped to the ground. Harry met his gaze, then turned around and left the courtroom. When Draco stepped out of the courtroom after signing his papers, he could hardly believe it had worked. He'd hoped Potter would go along, being who he was, but he hadn't been sure until Harry spoke. Draco started walking towards the Ministry lift, when a strong hand grabbed his arm and pulled him into a closet.
"What the—"
"Explain yourself, Malfoy."
Potter's voice was terse, demanding. Draco wondered, not for the first time, how such a short, skinny person could be so imposing.
It's for my mother."
"Why?"
"My mother is sick, Potter."
Draco pushed away from Potter, who barely budged.
"The trials took too much out of her. The war took too much out of her. She's on probation for 3 more years. She wouldn't be able to visit me if I'm outside the country, and I need to be there for her."
It was too dark in the closet to read Potter's face, but he seemed to back off just slightly. "And of all the people to pretend to be engaged to, you had to pick me."
"It's not as if I have other friends, Potter," Draco ground out.
We're not friends." Potter sounded almost confused.
"I wasn't implying we were friends."
Draco let out an exasperated sigh.
"I'm just saying I had no one to ask, and given your tendency towards a hero complex, I thought you might help me. And besides, you really think they're going to mess with their savior? You have far too much power for them to send your fiancé away."
And then Potter was grabbing him by the shirt and shoving him into the closet door.
"You're using me for my name?"
Draco pushed back again and resolutely ignored the fact that Potter smelled like strawberries.
Yes, just a bit."
God, Malfoy, and here I thought you'd gained an ounce of self-respect after everything.
What's that supposed to?
All through our school years, you accused me of using my name to get further, and here you are doing exactly that.
I'm sorry for not being you, Potter,
Draco spat, anger coming back in force.
But not everyone has the luxury of staying morally incorrupt. I don't care what happens to me. This is for my mother. And as a reminder, you lied to the Wizengamot as well, so if you backtrack now, you'll screw yourself too.
Potter opened the closet door and sent Draco one last glare before he turned to walk away. The owl came just after midnight.
Malfoy, I'll do it. For Narcissa, not for you.
Molly Weasley has invited us to stay at the Burrow this weekend so she can get to know you. She's devastated I didn't tell her about our, quote, relationship sooner. You will show up on Friday at 5:30 p.m. You will act pleasant. And if you say one rude word to any of the Weasleys, I will turn you over to the Wizengamot myself, regardless of the consequences. H.J.P. The Burrow was tall. It looked like someone had built individual rooms and stacked them on top of each other, but it still gave off a homey feel compared to the sterility of the manor. It was certainly nicer than Draco expected, though he was really expecting a hovel in the ground after all the Weasley hate he'd heard his father spew. Draco started his walk down the narrow gravel path towards the Weasley's home. Moments later, Potter stepped out of the front door and walked to meet him along the path. He was wearing a button-up shirt, the blue color bright against Potter's brown skin. As usual, his hair looked like a bird had attacked it, and it unfairly suited him. Potter was frowning as he approached, and Draco braced himself for another argument.
Any hint of pure-blood, bigoted bullshit, especially to the Weasleys, I turn you right into the Auras, Potter warned when he reached Draco.
Yes, I read the letter, thanks, Draco replied. I'm on my best behavior, Potter.
And you can't call me Potter, we're engaged, Potter said, then winced as he added, Draco.
Yes, we are. Harry.
The name felt weird out of his mouth.
Ron and Hermione know the relationship is fake, but everyone else needs to think it's real. I love Molly to death, but she can't keep a secret to save her life, and I'm not close enough to anyone else to ask them to keep this quiet. Got it?
Potter's brow narrowed as he waited for Draco's confirmation.
Yes, got it.
Draco supposed it was too much to ask to have no one know it was fake. The front door opened again, letting out a beaming Molly Weasley. She looked exactly as she had when he met her back in second year, though with maybe a few more wrinkles around her eyes.
Draco, dear!
She cried as she bustled towards them. Draco's eyes widened at the friendliness.
Oh, is Harry keeping you? It's so lovely to have you here. I hope you don't mind. I've invited the rest of the Weasleys and some family friends over for supper. Everyone wants to congratulate you two on your engagement. And you'll be married so soon!
Mrs. Weasley had barely paused as she spoke, but now she looked at them both expectantly.
Well, is that all right?
Draco gave Potter a quick, panicked glance, and he seemed just as uneasy. But Potter nodded.
Sure, Molly, that's fine.
Great. Draco, is that all right with you?
Draco cleared his throat.
Yes, Mrs. Weasley. Thank you for thinking of us.
She grinned.
Oh, not at all, not at all. And call me Molly, will you, dear?
Yes. Thank you, Molly.
That's better. That's better.
Molly patted the front of her apron as if forgetting something.
Well, back to the house. Our guest will be here any minute.
Draco opened his mouth to ask how they knew he and Potter had agreed to them coming so fast, but Potter shut him up with a hard stare. The inside of the house was filled with magical items bobbing about, but Draco barely had a chance to look around before the guests started arriving. There were a few people he recognized, but most of the people were red-headed and entirely unfamiliar. In the crowd, Draco was able to spot Ronald and Ginevra Weasley, and Granger as well. He thought he got a glimpse of Luna, too. Dinner was a loud and overwhelming affair, nothing like the stoic dinner parties the Malfoys once held. guests were crowded around a huge table that stretched all the way from the window to the wall. Draco was almost thankful to be seated next to Potter, though Potter did his best to interact with everyone but Draco. When the tables were cleared, the guests went right back to their shouting and mingling and boisterousness around the house. Draco found himself caught in a conversation with some Weasley great aunt, who was assaulting him with a long tale about a rabbit she found in her garden.
"Excuse me, Aunt Betta," Granger interrupted politely. "Do you mind if we steal Draco for a moment?"
Aunt Betta was happy to move on to her next victim, and Draco was whisked away by Granger and Weasley, Ronald Weasley, into an empty room. When the door shut behind them, Granger crossed her arms. Weasley sighed.
"Harry told us what he's doing for you," he said. "I think he's balmy."
He's doing me a big favor."
"More than big, I'd say," Weasley replied. "As we're his best friends, we supposedly have known about your relationship the entire time. We're friendly. We call you Draco. You call us by our first names."
"Very well. Thank you, Ronald."
"It's Ron. And don't thank me."
He and Granger, Hermione, began to walk towards the door. But Hermione turned back towards Draco before she went back to the party.
"If you hurt Harry," she said pleasantly, "the Wizengamot will be the least of your worries."
And then she was gone, and Draco could hear a chorus of voices calling his name. He headed back to the main room.
"Oh, good, Draco. There you are. We've got you both now."
Molly grabbed his hand and walked him to the center of the room, where Potter was already standing and looking uncomfortable with the attention.
"We want to hear the story of how you two got together." "Oh, and who proposed to who?"
Luna exclaimed.
Potter grimaced. "I'm sure no one wants to hear that."
"Yes, they do, Harry dear. Now go ahead, tell the story,"
Molly beamed.
"Draco, how about you tell them how we got together?"
Potter smiled softly at him, but his eyes were annoyed.
"Yes, of course," Draco replied smoothly. "Well, as you may know, I spent the last year awaiting my trial on house arrest. Harry went to check up on me as part of his aura training, and we hit it off right away. He kept coming back, bringing food or coffee, and we eventually fell in love."
"Oh, that's so sweet," Luna crowed. "You two hated each other so much back in school. How did you ever get past all that?"
Draco cleared his throat.
"As they say, communication is the key to any healthy relationship."
Molly gave him a kind smile.
"That's lovely, Draco. Now, who proposed to the other?"
Harry proposed, of course."
"Ah, of course Harry proposed."
Molly settled herself down on a couch.
"Now, Harry, how'd you do it? Was it romantic?"
Draco loves boats," Potter stated. "So I proposed to him on a boat at, sunset."
Draco took a deep breath in, trying and failing to hold back his irritation.
Boats, of all things.
"We should make them kiss,"
Aunt Betta exclaimed.
"Yeah, kiss,"
another Weasley aunt joined in. The room soon filled with a chorus of demands for them to kiss.
"Okay, okay," Potter called. "Just one, though."
Potter's smile was strained as he turned to Draco, softly held his chin, and leaned up to kiss him. Kissing Harry Potter was not what Draco would have expected. His lips were soft and gentle, and Draco couldn't help but lean in further. He would have expected rough lips and anger, but this was almost tender, almost sweet. And then Potter pulled back, not meeting Draco's eyes, and turned towards the crowded room.
"And there you go. Molly, should we bring out dessert?"
After all the guests had left, Molly ushered Draco and Potter upstairs.
"Oh, really, Molly, we don't need to share a room," Potter told her.
"Nonsense," she insisted. "You're adults, and you're engaged. You should be sharing a bed."
There was a bathroom attached to the bedroom, and Molly left them for the night. The burrow was nicer than Draco had expected, but, well,
You can take the floor, Drago said, half-joking. I'll sleep on the bed.
Makes sense, Potter replied, rolling his eyes. Fine.
Oh, okay.
Drago was surprised he'd agreed with no argument. Potter took the bathroom first, and Drago headed downstairs for a glass of water. He wouldn't get his wand back until the Aurors finished their investigation into his and Potter's engagement. A year without a wand, and Agua Menti might have been the spell he missed most. Drago was trying to be as quiet as possible, not wanting to disturb anyone. But as he neared the kitchen, he heard hushed voices arguing inside.
You need to be more accepting, Molly's voice snapped. And I'm sure you're the reason Harry didn't feel comfortable enough to tell us about Drago. We are his only family, Arthur. We need to be there for him.
I'm here to protect him, a deeper voice, Arthur Weasley's, retorted. You think it's a coincidence the engagement gets announced the same day the boy uses Wilkie's law to get out of exile? He's using Harry.
Harry is sharp enough to avoid being used by anybody. Your only job here is to be supportive of Harry's choice in partner. If you could just set aside the prejudice you have against the young man's father.
Oh, his father? His father is in Azkaban, Molly, and for good reason. That's not prejudice, that's being rational.
Draco is not his father, Molly growled. And if he were, Harry would not be in love with him.
Draco slipped away as quietly as he came, leaving earshot of the conversation. So, Arthur thought they were lying about the engagement. That was good to know. But even though Arthur was right about them, Draco still felt a twinge of hurt he couldn't explain. And an even bigger twinge of guilt from hearing Molly Weasley defending him.
Draco, Ginny and I are headed into town for some shopping. Would you care to join?
Molly asked, walking around the table to pour everyone their morning coffee.
Oh, that's a very kind offer, but I think I'm all set, thanks.
Draco gave his best attempt at a friendly smile. It wasn't that he disliked Molly. She seemed kind enough, and had even defended him last night. But she also seemed like she had a lot of energy. Too much energy for him to deal with. And walking through town with her and Potter's ex was not his idea of fun.
Nonsense, I insist. We'll leave after breakfast. Harry, you can help Arthur with the back garden. The gnomes are at it again.
No problem,
Potter replied, smirking at Draco. Draco sighed in resignation, then turned to give Molly another forced smile. After apparating into downtown Ottery St. Catchpole, Draco found it was rather easy to avoid talking about Potter or the engagement, as Molly and Ginevra were perfectly capable of keeping up their conversation without his participation. Ginevra had cut her hair short since leaving school, and it suited her. She walked with confidence and seemed genuinely happy to be spending time with him and Molly. They stopped at shop after shop, checking out clothes and books and jewelry without buying anything. They'd ask his opinion on things every now and then, but seemed comfortable to let him follow along quietly. It wasn't until lunchtime that Molly actively brought Draco into the conversation.
Now, what are you and Harry doing for the holidays this year? They're already coming up quick.
Draco paused, trying to think of what Potter would want him to say.
We haven't really talked about that yet, I don't think.
Well, I'm sure you'll want to visit your mother. But every year we have a nice dinner with just the family. Arthur and I and the kids and their partners. Harry is always invited, and of course you are too now. You're part of the family. Isn't that right, Ginny?
Ginevra gave Draco a kind smile.
Of course, we'd be happy to have you.
And for some reason, that put a lump in Draco's throat.
That's very kind of you, thank you. I'm sure we'd love to visit.
Molly's smile seemed relieved.
I'm glad to hear it. I just worry about our Harry. Sometimes I'm afraid he doesn't feel like part of the family.
Oh, Draco replied, trying to come up with a reasonable response. I'm sure that Harry thinks of you all as family. It certainly seems like it.
Thank you, dear, Molly sighed. I hope you're right. I'm sure he's told you all about the horrible muggles who raised him. It sometimes seems like they left a lasting impression on him. I'm glad that he has you to show him how much love he deserves.
Drago tried not to let the guilt show on his face.
That's very kind of you to say.
Right, Molly said, brightening. Let's talk of happier things. You're getting married tomorrow, right? What will you be wearing?
Oh, yes, I have robes for the occasion. We'll just be signing our paperwork at the ministry, though. We didn't want a big ceremony.
Yes, that's what Harry said, too. Molly looked thoughtful. What if you two got married at the borough? It could be a small event, nothing too much. But that way, it's a little bit more special for the two of you than just paperwork.
That's very nice of you to offer, Drago replied, as polite as he could. But I don't think it's necessary.
No, no, I insist. You should have people there who care about you both. Or would you prefer to have it at your family's manor, so your mother could attend?
I don't think Mother would be up for that, Drago said quickly. Really, it's fine. We already have a plan for tomorrow, and we wouldn't want to impose.
It's settled then, Molly announced. You'll get married at the borough. Monday is a holiday and Harry's off work. So let's move the wedding to Monday, and we'll spend tomorrow getting the place ready.
Drago looked at Ginevra, who seemed amused.
It's best not to argue, she told him.
And that was that. After dealing with the gnomes, Harry headed to the office to work on some paperwork. With everyone but Ginny moved out of the borough, and Ginny being off with Molly and Malfoy, Harry felt weird just hanging around the place. Arthur had helped with the gnomes, but he'd been acting distant, and Harry decided he'd be more productive at work. Since it was a Saturday, the Aurors department was nearly empty save for the weekend shift. Harry went into one of the conference rooms to finish the paperwork. Even though the Aurors sometimes used him on cases, he was still in training, and he didn't have his own desk yet. Last week, a team had finished up a case on a string of burglaries in Diagon Alley. The paperwork was straightforward enough, and Harry had nearly finished with it when Matty and Gilbertson walked into the conference room.
"Afternoon, Potter."
His voice was as gruff and unfriendly as always.
"Good afternoon," Harry replied. "So you and the Malfoy boy are getting married, I've been told."
"Yep."
"I'm in charge of the investigation into your engagement."
Gilbertson looked smug.
"Great, good for you."
Gilbertson glared at him.
"I was trying to give you a favor by giving you a heads up. I'll see you soon, Potter. Get ready for a thorough interrogation."
Harry just glared back as Gilbertson left the conference room. He finished up the last bit of paperwork, dropped it off at the front desk, and headed back to the burrow. Drago stood with Ginevra outside of the yarn shop, waiting for Molly to finish up. They'd spent the afternoon purchasing decorations for the wedding, then had a quick dinner. The sun was already starting to set.
"So, you and Harry, huh?"
Ginevra smirked.
"Yes, me and Harry," Drago replied. That doesn't bother you, does it?"
Ginevra burst into laughter.
"Merlin, you're joking, right?"
Drago just stared at her in confusion.
"You two used to date."
She started laughing harder.
"Shit, you're serious. That's hilarious. No, it doesn't bother me."
"Oh, okay. Good."
"You know I'm dating Luna, yes?"
Ginevra's laughter finally began to subside.
"Harry and I are good friends. We're definitely not compatible romantically. And let's be honest, you ending up with Harry is not much of a surprise."
"It's not?"
"Not really. You've both always been hyper-fixated on each other. I'm glad you were able to work through your pasts, though. You seem really happy together."
Drago cleared his throat uncomfortably.
"Yeah, me too. Thanks."
Molly finally left the yarn shop, arms filled with bags. She grinned as she saw Drago and Ginevra.
"All set. Are you two ready to head home?"
After the conversation with Gilbertson and an awkward dinner with just Arthur, Harry had hoped a long jog around the property would help him relax. No such luck. Harry's earbuds were playing music for him as he walked back to his room after the run. He started stripping off his sweaty clothes, turning to walk over to the bathroom and shower when he was hit by a wet, naked Drago Malfoy. Harry immediately wiped out, taking Malfoy down with him.
"Oh my God, why are you wet?"
Harry jumped back, grabbing for his clothes to cover himself.
"Why are you naked?"
Malfoy screamed, looking around frantically. Harry couldn't stop looking at him, because those abs. And was that a tattoo? And holy... He pulled his eyes back towards Malfoy's face, then grabbed the blanket from the bed and threw it at him. Malfoy grabbed it and immediately wrapped it around his waist, looking furious. His wet hair drooped over his forehead like a drowned rat.
"Why are there no towels in this place?"
"Listen, I don't...
You smell terrible, Potter. You need a shower."
"Well, I was going to shower." Malfoy closed his eyes tightly, looking pained.
"Do us both a favor and find a towel before you do so."
Laying in bed that night, Draco couldn't sleep. Even with the images of Potter's unfair body shoved to the back of his head, he kept thinking about what Molly had said that afternoon.
"Molly is worried about you," he said into the darkness.
"I'm trying to sleep,"
came Potter's muffled voice from the foot of the bed.
"She thinks, because the muggles who raised you treated you terribly, you have terrible self-worth or something. Is that why you agreed to faking this engagement with me?"
He tried to make the question sound sarcastic.
"None of your business, Malfoy."
Potter's voice wasn't unkind, but Draco could feel the tension in the air that he'd introduced with his question. And he couldn't let it go. He'd never been able to let anything about Potter go, not since he was a child.
"You know, Molly was treating me like I was family, like I was important to them."
Potter sighed. "Yeah, the Weasleys are good at that."
"What did the muggles do to you?"
"I don't want to talk about it." Draco didn't respond, but after a few minutes of silence, Potter spoke again.
"What's your tattoo of?"
"Were you checking me out, Potter?"
Potter just snorted in response.
"It's a dragon," Draco told him.
"Like your name?"
"Yes, like my name."
Draco didn't explain further, but something in Potter's tone told him that he knew exactly why Draco had gotten the tattoo.
"I like it,"
Potter replied simply, and Draco felt his heart pound harder in his chest. A moment later, Potter said, "The muggles that raised me were my mother's sister and her family. They didn't want me there."
"But you're Harry Potter."
"And my dad was a wizard, and Indian. They hated him, and they hated my mom for marrying him. So they hated me. I didn't belong in their perfect white suburban home," he scoffed. Draco's mind flashed back to every time he'd said something cruel to Potter about those muggles, and he felt sick to his stomach.
"I'm sorry."
"It's been a long time since I've left. I'm fine now."
"What did they do to you?"
Draco could feel the questioning getting annoying, but couldn't stop himself. He needed to know. Potter gave a half laugh.
"You're really not going to let this go, are you? Molly's rubbed off on you."
Draco smiled into the darkness.
"She's a persistent woman. I have a lot to learn."
"Why do you even care?"
Because he wanted to know more about Potter. Because he wanted to understand what made him who he was. Because studying Potter was all he'd done since he was a child.
"I don't know," Draco replied. "I just do."
"They didn't really do anything," Potter said, resigned. "They mostly pretended I didn't exist. Although living in a cupboard as a child was less than ideal."
"Is that a gay joke?"
Potter laughed again, and the tension in the room eased. The metaphorical closet existed separately from the cupboard, which was quite real. Draco took a deep breath, reeling in his emotions. He needed to backtrack, needed to get less personal.
"No wonder you're so messed up,"
he finally quipped.
"You've got me there," Potter chuckled. "Does that mean you'll let me go to sleep now?"
Draco almost smiled, but his outrage was still bubbling.
"Good night, Potter."
"Night, Malfoy."
Harry stirred awake at a loud knocking at the door. He rolled over and tried to muffle the sound with his pillow, but Molly's bright voice prevented him from falling back asleep.
"Good morning! Are you too decent?
She knocked again. Shit, Harry was on the floor. He jumped up, threw his pillow on the bed, and bunched up his blankets in his arms.
Ow, what was that for?
Malfoy grumbled, sleepily.
Wait, what are you doing?
Move over.
Harry pulled the comforter down and jumped in next to Malfoy, bumping against him as he quickly set his blankets on top and smoothed them out. Malfoy looked disheveled and exhausted, hair mussed and bags under his eyes. Still, he was wearing silk pajamas, and Harry somehow felt underdressed in his own snitch-patterned ones. Molly knocked again.
Boys, can I come in?
Sure, Molly, come in, Harry called, as casually as he could. He scooched closer to Malfoy, trying to settle in a way that would make it look like they were comfortable with each other. Malfoy put his right arm around Harry's shoulders, catching on to the plan to look like a couple, but it felt stiff and awkward. Molly opened the door slowly, holding a tray in one hand with two plates on it. She didn't seem to notice how staged their positioning was.
I just thought I'd bring you two breakfast. One day until the wedding. How are you feeling?
She handed them the tray, and Harry scooped a forkful of eggs into his mouth instead of answering. Malfoy took his arm from behind Harry and moved it so he could grab his own plate.
We're very excited, Malfoy said. Can't wait.
Malfoy's voice was still gravelly from waking up, and had it been any other man, Harry would have been in trouble. Molly put a hand to her heart.
Oh, I'm just so glad you agreed to have the wedding here.
Yes, it'll be nice, Harry smiled, then shoved some more food in his mouth. Malfoy did the same next to him.
All right, well, I'll let you be. Eat up. And meet us downstairs when you're done. We're decorating for tomorrow.
Thank you, Malfoy replied, giving her a soft smile. After Molly left, Malfoy moved away from Harry in the bed and continued eating. He let out soft moans as he ate.
This food is delicious.
Yeah, Harry replied simply, not looking at him.
She's a great cook.
He did his best to ignore Malfoy's inappropriate vocalizations as they finished breakfast. They spent the rest of the morning decorating the back garden of the Burrow for the wedding. Arthur had gone into the ministry to take care of something, but Ginny was helping out. Molly kept pairing Malfoy with Harry to take care of different things, probably because she thought Harry wanted that, but he was surprisingly competent for someone raised with house elves. After lunch, Molly shooed Harry and Malfoy over to the flue, claiming she had a surprise for them.
All right, boys. I have a friend over by the coast who runs a line of dinner cruises. I thought, what better way to spend the day before your wedding? After all, Harry told us how much you love boats, Draco, and they're such an important part of your engagement.
Molly was grinning, and Harry smiled back.
That sounds great, Molly. That's so sweet of you to think of us, isn't it, Draco?
Harry turned to Malfoy, who had paled five shades. He looked at Harry with wide eyes, then turned to Molly.
Yes, thank you so much, he told her, voice sounding strained.
Of course, of course. You're going to love it.
She held out the jar of flue powder towards them.
Now you'll want to say Grand Otterton Lines. It'll take you to their main office, and they'll board you right away. The boat leaves in 10 minutes. You've got plenty of time.
Malfoy gave Harry another panicked look, but Harry just gave him a confused expression in return and took a handful of flue powder.
Grand Otterton Lines. Potter, I don't do boats.
Malfoy was speedwalking from the fireplace at the dinner cruise office to catch up with Harry.
What? Why not? I am not getting on that boat.
Fine, I'll see you in 6 hours.
6 hours? The dinner cruise lasts 6 hours.
According to the poster in the office, yeah. You took your sweet time going through the flue.
Molly was talking to me about her friend who got us the tickets, Malfoy snapped. Potter, listen to me. I'm only going to say this once. I can't swim.
Hence the boat.
Shut up, Potter. I'm not getting on the boat.
Listen, I'm not going to force you on the boat, but I'm getting on. And you know Molly's going to be talking about this for the next few months, if not longer. We're getting married, Malfoy. You're not going to be able to avoid her. Malfoy let out a dramatic huff.
Fine, but if the boat sinks, I'm blaming you.
Harry rolled his eyes.
Whatever.
They walked towards the dock, following the signs. There was a man with an aggressively curled mustache standing on the docks in front of a two-story ship.
You must be Harry and Draco. Mr. Potter, I'd recognize you anywhere. I would have gladly given you and your fiancé a free dinner cruise around the Channel. But then, with you being Molly's boy, too, well, it's just a pleasure to meet you.
Great to meet you, too. Sorry, I don't think I caught your name, Harry asked.
Oh, just call me Peter. And Mr. Malfoy, wonderful to see you, too. Molly's told me great things. Now follow me. Everyone else has already boarded.
Peter led them onto the ship, taking them up a flight of stairs and over to a small dining table right next to the ship rails.
The best views for my guests of honor, he exclaimed. The table is yours for the day, but dinner won't be served for a few more hours. There's a buffet on the first level if you get hungry before then, and you're of course welcome to explore the ship.
Thank you, Peter, Harry said. We really appreciate it. Malfoy just gave a polite nod, looking somehow even paler than before. He took a seat at the table, and Harry followed.
Sorry, Malfoy. Not the best table for someone afraid of the water.
Harry kept his tone light, but he was starting to get a little concerned. Malfoy was leaning as far away from the rail as possible, staring at the menu on their table.
Molly told him great things, Malfoy said quietly, ignoring Harry's comment. Why would she do that?
She must like you, Harry replied.
It's been a long time since someone did.
Did what?
Liked you?
Malfoy met his eyes, sitting up in his chair and sticking up his nose.
Never mind, Potter. It's none of your business.
The brief opening up to immediately shutting him out made Harry feel a touch of pity.
I mean, you're not terrible, Harry said. You seem pretty decent these days. You've been nice to the Weasleys, like I asked. I don't think you've said a single bigoted thing, at least in front of me.
Malfoy looked hard at him, seeming to evaluate if Harry was taking the piss. Then he nodded.
I would have been nice to them anyways, Malfoy told him. I only ever hated them because my father did. But I learned the hard way just how wrong my father was about, well, pretty much everything.
Harry quirked his lips. Probation really turned you around, huh? Malfoy snorted in reply.
Granger, actually. Didn't she tell you? She stopped by at the beginning of my probation last year. Brought me loads of books on pure-blooded bigotry.
Wow, Harry replied, eyebrows raised. And you read them?
Yes, I read them. At first, because I had nothing better to do. And then, because I actually was learning things.
She never told me about that. Did she stop by at all afterwards?
No, I hadn't seen her again until Friday. But I owled her a thank you note after I finished reading them.
Hmm. Harry looked at him thoughtfully. So no more blood purity bullshit?
No more blood purity bullshit, Malfoy agreed, and he looked serious about it.
Harry couldn't help but smile. It seemed like some part of him had been waiting for this. Since that first ill-fated meeting in Madame Malkin's all those years ago, Harry had been intrigued by the mean, judgmental boy, and a bit of his mind had maybe known even then that Malfoy was capable of learning and growing and changing. Harry leaned back in his chair. So, why are you afraid of boats?
I'm not afraid of boats, Malfoy huffed dramatically. And I told you I wouldn't say it again.
Okay, fine, Harry conceded, letting out a small laugh.
Why can't you swim, then?
Malfoy glared at him.
I'm going to take a walk.
Harry laughed in earnest at that, and then laughed again as Malfoy stumbled up, walking away from the table with non-existent sea legs. Malfoy was definitely better, kinder, funnier, and somehow knowing that made Harry's stomach turn a little. Or maybe the boat was getting to him, too. Peter was apparently vegan, and so was all of his cruise line's cuisine. Dinner was served promptly at 5:30 p.m., and a server brought salads and gnocchi right to their table. The first bite was delicious, and it only got better from there. Malfoy appeared to be enjoying the meal just as much as Harry, groaning and humming to himself as he chewed, and only looking warily at the water every few minutes.
"Okay," Malfoy said after they'd finished. "You're an aura."
"I'm still in training."
"You're an aura. Any idea how long this investigation or whatever is going on for?"
"Not sure," Harry replied. "I know the guy heading it, though, and he's a real piece of work."
"Who?"
"Mattian Gilbertson. Your dad killed his, so he's got a bit of a major grudge against you." Malfoy sighed.
"Does he at least like you?"
"Nope. Hates me. I solved one of his cases back when I first started training, and he's still bitter about it."
"Great."
"Yeah, I was going to say something, actually. We should really work on keeping our stories consistent for when we get interrogated." Malfoy leaned forward in his chair, pushing up his sleeves and resting his thin forearms against the table.
"Okay, well, we have how we got together, and how you proposed. What else will he ask us?"
Harry nodded his lip, thinking.
"Favorite foods, allergies, pet peeves. Honestly, I feel like I already know most of these things about you from school." "Really?" Malfoy raised an eyebrow. "What am I allergic to, then?"
"Sesame seeds, and the entire spectrum of human emotion."
"Ha ha."
Malfoy rolled his eyes, but he looked amused.
"What are my pet peeves?"
"Slow walkers, when people are late. Loud chewers. Being on boats. Think you can do me?" Harry gave him a challenging smirk.
"You're not allergic to anything, at least that I know of. Pet peeves. People who assume they know you. Slow talkers. People who use your name to get things."
Malfoy grinned tentatively. Harry's gut lurched at Malfoy's grin, but he laughed. "Not bad, Malfoy. What are you up to these days? Are you studying to become a barrister or something? Not many people would know those random laws off the top of their head." Malfoy smiled in surprise.
"I am, actually. Yes. I..."
Just then, Peter walked up to their table.
"And how is the lovely couple enjoying their cruise?"
"Oh, it's great. Thank you, Peter." Harry turned his smile over to Peter.
"I'm glad to hear it. Now you two, follow me. I'm going to show you the most romantic spot on the ship."
They headed to the back of the boat, the sound of the engine loud against the stillness of the air.
"Sorry about the noise," Peter shouted over the engine, "but look at that view!"
To Harry's surprise, Malfoy walked closer towards the rail, taking in the brilliant orange and yellow sunset.
"It's beautiful," he shouted to Peter.
"I know,"
Peter grinned.
"Well, I'll leave you two alone to enjoy."
Harry stepped slowly up next to Malfoy, standing shoulder to shoulder with him.
"It really is beautiful,"
Harry yelled over the engine. Malfoy turned and smiled at him, and Harry's heart squeezed. They stood there watching the sunset in silence for several minutes, until the boat started jerking in the water, turning upwards and shifting down aggressively.
"Esteemed guests, this is your captain speaking,"
Peter's voice called from the speakers.
"It appears there's a storm coming in, and we've hit some rough waters. Please head to the lower deck and stay there while we pass through."
Malfoy was still looking out at the sunset. With the golden sky highlighting his pale features, he looked beautiful.
"Can't we stay just a little longer?" Malfoy asked.
Harry grabbed his arms and gently urged him away from the rail.
"Aren't you afraid of boats and water? Come on."
"Fine," Malfoy said, pulling himself out of Harry's grasp. Just as he took a step forward, the boat hit another big wave. In the split second that followed, Malfoy lost his balance, and Harry barely had time to register the panicked look on his face as Malfoy was thrown over the rail and into the water behind them.
"Draco!"
Harry screamed, terror gripping his entire body. He ripped his shoes off, took a running start, and leapt into the water after Malfoy.
After Draco.
Draco, who was bobbing in the water, gasping for air. Harry swam as fast as he could, making quick strokes through the water. Draco's head dipped under and back up, and Harry's heart left his body.
Get Draco, get Draco, get Draco, get...
Harry finally made it to him. He grabbed onto Draco's torso and lifted him higher.
I can't swim,
Draco shrieked, wrapping his arms around Harry's neck in a death grip.
I know, Harry yelled back. I've got you.
Draco was heavy and whimpering against him. Harry kept one arm wrapped tightly around Draco's body, using the other to swim after the ship. The waves continued to jerk them up and down, and it was everything he could do to keep them both above water. His swimming arm was straining, but he had to get there, had to get Draco onto something solid. It felt like hours before they finally made it back to the ship. Someone must have seen them go over, because there was a rescue boat and a crewmate at the water waiting for them.
Here, here, she called. Grab on!
Harry heaved Draco onto the rescue boat. The crewmate helped them make it up the ladder, and the second they made it to the top, Draco wrapped his arms around Harry and clung to him. Another crewmate set them up in the captain's quarters with blankets and cocoa to dry off and warm up. Draco refused to let go of Harry, but Harry was too cold himself to want him to let go. And a softer part of Harry needed to feel Draco's arms around him, as proof that Draco was here and safe and next to him.
Are you okay? Are you okay?
Harry asked after a while, through his own chattering teeth.
No boats, Draco replied,
voice soft but resolute.
No more boats.
Harry let out a sigh, relieved that Draco sounded calm now. He wrapped the blankets even tighter around them both.
No more boats, he agreed.
Peter had given them dry clothes to wear, but Harry and Draco continued to cling to each other for warmth as they walked into the burrow that night. As they closed the door, Arthur stepped into the room.
Great, you're back. Come with me. Aura Gilbertson is upstairs.
Arthur, listen, not right now. We've just...
I don't care. Upstairs. Now.
Harry turned his head to look at Draco, but Draco just looked resigned.
Resigned and exhausted.
They followed Arthur up the stairs to Ron's old bedroom, where Gilbertson had already made himself comfortable.
I see you two boys have learned how to act cozy together.
Harry finally moved away from Draco and sat down in an empty chair, gesturing for him to do the same.
What do you want?
I'm investigating your engagement. You know this, Potter.
On a Sunday evening?
Harry sighed. Draco just stared at the floor.
Arthur here seems to think you just made up this engagement, so Malfoy won't get sent away. Is that right?
Harry turned to Arthur, who met his gaze unapologetically.
No, he's not right, Harry replied.
And you're aware that lying about Wilkie's law could result in a 6-month stint in Azkaban?
Gilbertson looked smug. Harry had not been aware, but at this point he didn't care. Not after Draco nearly drowned.
We're engaged for real, Gilbertson.
He turned to Arthur.
I'm sorry, Arthur. I know why you don't believe us, but we're getting married tomorrow. Now, we've had a rough day and could really use some hot showers. See you at the wedding.
He stood up and waited for Draco to follow suit, then left. When they got to their room, Harry sat down on the bed. Draco quietly closed the bedroom door and walked over to sit down next to him.
He's right, you know, Draco said softly. You really could get sent to Azkaban. It's not worth it. You're not getting anything out of this.
They're not going to send me to Azkaban, Harry replied. And you don't have a choice anymore. I'm doing this. You don't deserve exile. Draco just gave him a soft look, then turned toward the bathroom.
I'll shower first. I do deserve exile, you know, Draco said that night. It was a more than fair judgment. I'm just a coward.
Harry turned towards the bed, facing Draco's voice.
You're not a coward. You and Narcissa both saved my life. You both helped me defeat Voldemort. And you both deserve to stay in Britain. It's your home.
It was quiet for so long after his words that Harry thought Draco had fallen asleep. But then he said,
I'm sorry. What? Why? I'm sorry for using your name to get out of exile. I'm sorry for siding with Voldemort. I'm sorry for everything I said to you and your friends back at school. I'm sorry for...
Shut up, Harry said, not unkindly. That's not necessary.
It is, though.
Fine, then I'm sorry, too, for nearly killing you, for not helping you, for...
Okay, fine. Stop.
That's what I thought. Harry smiled into the darkness, feeling content. Before he could overthink it, he stood up, gathered his blankets, and slipped into the bed next to Draco.
What are you...
Draco's voice was strained. I'm still cold, and I'm tired. I'd like to be comfortable. And I'd like to be by your side. Harry turned and smiled softly at Draco, entranced by a sliver of moonlight reflected on his pale skin.
I suppose I could accommodate that, Draco replied, mouth twitching.
Great, Harry said. Now go to sleep. Draco met his gaze and gave Harry a soft, grateful smile before closing his eyes. He shifted in the bed, moving so their arms just barely brushed together. Harry didn't fall asleep for a long time. Harry woke up the next morning to sunlight streaming in his face. He blinked his eyes open, finding himself in the bed alone. He craned his neck to see if the bathroom door was shut, but it seemed to be open. Maybe Draco had already headed downstairs. The wedding was at noon, after all. And what time was it? He leaned over to look at the clock, his hand landing on a piece of paper. It wasn't even 8 a.m. Harry picked up the paper, grabbed his glasses, and read.
Harry, you deserve better than protecting me. You've done enough for me already. Thank you for rescuing me, for being willing to help me and my mother, and for this whole weekend. I'm meeting with Gilbertson this morning. I think I'll move to France when they send me away. If you're ever interested in fire calling, send me an owl. I'd love to hear from you sometime. It was actually nice to get to know you. Warmest regards, Draco Malfoy.
Harry threw down the note and sprinted downstairs. Ron was sitting at the kitchen table, and he gave Harry a bewildered look as he rushed in.
What are you... Where is he?
Where's who?
Draco! I think he's leaving. Fuck! Is he already gone?
Ron raised an eyebrow.
I got here 10 minutes ago to help Mum with something, and I haven't seen him.
Haven't seen Mum either, actually. Do you know where she's gone off to?
Fuck!
Harry walked over to the table and collapsed into one of the chairs. Ron stared at him for a moment.
Everything okay?
I don't... Ron, I think I like him. Like him.
Yes, that's becoming clear.
Ron gave him a wry smile.
So, you like him?
And he doesn't like me like that. But he's going to get kicked out of the country.
Harry, Ron said calmly, look at me. Did he tell you why he was leaving?
To talk to Gilbertson, tell him the engagement was a lie. Something about me deserving better?
So he's subjecting himself to a life of exile, because he thinks it will make your life better.
Sounds a little self-sacrificing, doesn't it?
Honestly, sounds like something you'd do.
Actually, isn't that exactly what you did do, but...
Ron, what are you saying?
I'm saying the only reason he would have done that is if he cared for you. He obviously likes you like that.
So are you going to go get him?
Ron couldn't be right. There was no way Ron was right. But what if he was?
Okay, let's go.
They rushed to the fireplace and flew right to the ministry.
I can't believe he just left,
Harry growled as he ran with Ron to the ministry's lift.
The absolute asshole.
So, Malfoy, huh? Harry furiously pushed the lift button for the Auror's level. He's actually kind of funny. And sweet.
And an asshole, did I mention? He couldn't even have said goodbye. Who leaves a note?
Ron wisely kept silent for their ride, and stayed one step behind Harry as they walked as fast as they could to Gilbertson's office. After 3 right turns, Harry could see Draco's blonde hair from Gilbertson's doorway.
He's there. Harry took a deep breath. Ron punched him lightly on the shoulder.
Go get him, then.
Harry pushed the door open so hard it slammed against the wall. Draco jumped from his seat, and so did Gilbertson.
Draco,
he got out.
Potter, get out of my office,
Gilbertson snapped.
Draco, listen to me,
Harry said, ignoring Gilbertson completely.
You're a complete dick.
Draco let out a surprised laugh.
Okay. You can't just make me fall for you and then leave. It's a dick move, and you know it.
Harry could feel his face reddening as Draco just stared at him.
Potter, get out of my office,
Gilbertson repeated.
No, Harry said. I'm not getting out of your office.
You have feelings for me?
Draco asked, sounding shocked. Harry turned back to Draco.
Yes, I have feelings for you.
I thought you hated me.
I don't know if I ever hated you. I definitely didn't like you. But things changed.
Harry took another deep breath to steel himself.
Things changed when we kissed. When you bonded with Molly. When we saw each other naked.
This is extremely inappropriate.
Gilbertson, shut up,
Draco snapped.
Do go on, Harry.
Harry smiled at him.
Things changed on the boat. And you can imagine how upset I was when I found your note this morning and realized that the person I was falling for was going to leave the country. So marry me, Draco, because I'd like to date you.
Draco's jaw dropped completely open, and then he grinned, and it was the most beautiful thing Harry had ever seen.
You're serious?
Harry grinned back.
I'm serious.
So, are you in? Will you marry me?
Draco leapt forward and threw his arms around Harry's neck, and Harry held him tightly. Taking a step back, he grabbed Draco's face softly with both hands and tilted his own head upwards to kiss him. Harry melted into Draco as their lips met and moved against each other. It was more tender than their first kiss. It was longer, warmer, deeper. It was infinitely better now that he knew Draco, now that they knew each other and cared for each other. Harry was safe and home, and he even forgot about Gilbertson until he spoke.
Is this really necessary?
Gilbertson growled. Harry slowly pulled away from the kiss, smiling. Draco's eyes were bright.
Yes, Aura Gilbertson, Draco stated matter-of-factly. I'm afraid I'll have to retract my previous statement. Harry and I actually are getting married.
He grabbed Harry's hand, and they stepped out of the office together.
Draco grinned at Harry, then turned back to Gilbertson. Looking forward to the investigation.